Hello, hello. That was interesting. We had some background music playing there. This is Anthony hosting JavaScript Jam from the JavaScript Jam account for the first time. Hello, Brad. Okay.
Hello. Thank you, Anthony. Welcome,
Hello.
everyone.
Welcome to a brave new world of Twitter Spaces. I've done so many of them, but never actually hosted one before.
Well, you know what misery loves. So,
To be by itself.
in some multiverse, maybe that's the case.
So how's it going?
Yeah, well, welcome everyone to JavaScript Jam, JavaScript Jam Live. JavaScript Jam Live is a Twitter space for anything web development or JavaScript related. We sometimes hold it as an open mic, and sometimes we have a guest. Today is open mic night. That means anything that's web development related is on topic in the ecosystem or technically. Whether you're a beginner or an expert, feel free to raise your hand. And we'll happily bring you up to the stage. You can share a question, an opinion, a hot take, or comment on whatever topics we're talking about. Usually, we often pull from our newsletter, which Anthony, if you can get that pulled up, and we have a bunch of topics for what happened in the last week. But I think today we have some interesting news that just broke today, which we'll get into in a second. But before I do that, I realized I forgot to do intros. I am Ishan Nand, VP of Product at Edgio. And my co-host today is Anthony. I'll let Anthony introduce himself.
Hello, hello. My name is Anthony Campolo, and I'm a developer advocate at Edgio. And yeah, this is going to be an interesting conversation. Big news in the world of JavaScript. And I already see we got some people here from Netlify, actually. So feel free if you want to hop up and talk, you're totally welcome. Or if you want to just listen, also welcome. Also, hey to Will. Will is the co-founder with my podcast co-host Chris on Everfund. So I know they actually built a MVP with Gatsby many years ago that they ended up migrating to Redwood. So always interesting to hear their perspective on Gatsby-related things. Also, hello to Saban in the crowd as well from Prisma. So yeah, we got a good crew of people here.
Oh yeah, hey Sabin. Yeah, we've already started with a good crew. Yeah, as Anthony mentioned, the big news today was Netlify acquiring Gatsby. Are you? Oh, I just got added to co-host. Sorry. Which was really interesting news, especially given the acquisition of OneGraph in the last year. And I'm curious, Anthony, if you want to give kind of your take on it as somebody who's been in the ecosystem for a long time and thought so far.
Yeah, for sure. It's there's a lot of different kind of currents going along with it because when so we go back to like the beginning, like the before times when the Jamstack was first being invented, the really what I think the main players were Netlify and Gatsby. And there was like a very tight working relationship there in the sense that most people who created a Gatsby site would deploy their Gatsby site on Netlify because they made it really, really easy. They kind of were some of the first taste of what everyone loves about this current deployment paradigm and what so many frameworks now offer you, which is the ability to kind of like have a single command that builds a static site that then gets deployed to a URL that gets handed to you. So that was like really what I think kicked off a lot of what made the Jamstack so cool. And then you ended up with this weird kind of sideways turn where Gatsby decided to create their own cloud and to compete with Netlify. And then you ended up with this kind of like weird separation between the two. And now it's kind of like they have capitulated, I think, and said, we want to join the hive mind here and actually just become part of Netlify instead of try and have their own separate thing compete with it. So that's how I would describe like the macro. There's also some interesting GraphQL kind of undercurrents to it, which is that Netlify had acquired OneGraph and turned into Netlify Graph last year. And then not too long after, maybe 6 months or so, in December, they announced this is no longer accepting users. If you're still using this, you can keep using it for now. It was kind of a weird cryptic thing just thrown into their docs. And I didn't even know about it till today when Fred kind of pointed it out to me. And Gatsby just created this thing called Valhalla, which is like abstracting out their GraphQL content mesh from the framework into its own thing, which is kind of the equivalent of OneGraph, which is also the equivalent of like a product I worked on for like a year called StepZen. So that's also happening under the surface as well. But I think that's kind of less important than just the fact that now these two companies are one company, and that's a lot of people and a lot of, and interesting to be right on the heels of Netlify laying a lot of people off. So yeah, there's a lot to say about it.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. It's the thing you talked about, probably the biggest thing is this, I'll call it a VC thesis, which is you have these popular open source tools or packages or frameworks. And the question is, how do they monetize? How do they get return that money back to investors if they become an actual company? And there was or appeared to be this model when, for example, Remix took money, when a lot of these frameworks, took money, which is actually different from some of the previous generation of frameworks we've had in the past, where, say, for example, like jQuery is actually under a foundation. And there was a recognition that maybe that, depending on how you look at it, they were undervalued in terms of their impact on the market, and there might be other ways to leverage that value. And so what we started to see is, as an example, a lot of companies, they would framework offer, it looked like hosting at paired with, as the provider of the framework. And we are the best place to host that. And it seemed like Gatsby was also going down that path. And it's interesting to me when we look at the ecosystem as a whole, the one thing Netlify historically had been was more agnostic to that. And when they started, they were kind of not necessarily, aligned, say, to a particular framework. Seen over the last 12 months is there almost isn't frameworks left that are non-aligned to a cloud platform in some way or form. And that's a really interesting state of where the ecosystem is, especially given the macroeconomic climate we're in right now, where a lot of that VC money that was funding open source may create, a funding gap when they try to move from a Series A or a Series B company to a Series C company. So it's, you can kind of look at the moves in the past as maybe that model doesn't work, or you could also interpret this as maybe that model does work. And now, Netlify has one of the most popular React frameworks under their umbrella. So it's kind of, to me, a little bit of a Rorschach test on that kind of, shall we say, monetization thesis of open source. I'm not sure where you fall on that, but that was like the immediate, that was just going through the first thing that you talked about.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. Also, just want to once again open up to the audience. Anyone wants to come in and join in on the discussion, totally welcome to. But yeah, continue on.
Yeah, absolutely. Raise your hand. Happy to bring anyone up to the stage and get people's opinions.
And I'm going to start dropping some links and hopefully figuring out how to pin them.
Okay, great. I've been going through Twitter and looking at the reactions. I'm just looking at replies right now, and I see people who, were really excited. I've seen, competitors commenting and congratulating the team. So for example, I've seen Dion, who works at, Shopify, which owns Remix now. Lee, who works at Vercel, all tweeting and congratulating them for the acquisition. I noticed Stephen Tay, he said all of the major open source React frameworks now have the backing of a for-profit company. Remix is on Shopify, Gatsby is on Netlify, Next.js is on Vercel. And then there's a reply to it, very much similar to what we're talking about, where Svelte is Vercel, Solid, and 11D are being sponsored by Netlify. So it's a really interesting impact on the ecosystem. Even on the other hand, as much as you were talking about, what's really interesting that Gatsby innovated on recently was essentially, in some ways, a competitor to Open Graph. And it's actually a more backend thing, which is really important for,
One graph, not open graph.
building. Which is the other thing that I will say, having attended the Jamstack conference in the last few years, Edgio had also been a sponsor of the Jamstack conference in some form or another for the last few years. It did feel, as an observer, that Netlify and Gatsby teams were I don't know what to say, like they seemed to be close. Philosophically, if you look at the speakers at Jamstack Conference, which is organized and run by Netlify, there was a lot of presence of Gatsby either as a topic or as speakers. The even down to the details of, Vercel and Next created, ISR, incremental static generation, or an ISG and ISR, and the Netlify Gatsby one, I think they called it deferred. Static rendering. As much as it's, you might look at those and think, oh, they're all basically the same. There are little details that are slightly different between them, and those details were much more closely aligned to Netlify and Gatsby in terms of their way of thinking of things. As an example, like there's a very strong adherence to a principle of immutable deploys in, the original version of DPR, although they changed it so they had compatibility with ISR later. And that was also echoed in kind of Gatsby's version as well. So they also seem to be very philosophically close. So that was another way that I think this seems like it might have been natural, as a joining of forces. So that in some sense we're kind of already culturally aligned in a lot of ways.
Okay, I figured it out. The two tweets are now pinned to the top.
Ah, great. Okay, thank you. So,
Also, we got Ryan Carniato in the house. I'm gonna just call him out and ask him to
oh
speak because
yeah,
let's get his
I
take on
didn't
it.
notice. Yeah, Ryan actually has been on the JavaScript Jam podcast, demoing Solid. We had him on a while back. Great to see you.
We also got Matt Billman in the
Oh
crowd.
wow.
Hello, Matt.
Okay. Hey Matt. Hey Ryan. Thanks for joining.
Right. For anyone who does not know, Ryan is the creator of Solid.js and someone who works at Netlify.
Hey, is my mic working this time? I've been having terrible time on Spaces recently.
You sound
You
great,
sound,
super clear.
yeah, and it's probably Spaces if there's an issue and not you. It's had a little
Yeah, you
flakiness.
sound, you were actually lagging earlier. Just heads up.
Oh, maybe it's just maybe that's me and not Spaces. But thank you for the heads up. I might change my internet router at this point and switch to the other one.
Also, we have Matt came up to speak. What's up, Matt? Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, hey everyone. Thought I would also just pop in and say hi.
Yeah, and yeah, feel free to introduce yourself to our audience. I would assume a lot of people already know who you are, but feel free and Ryan as well.
I'm Matt Billman. I'm a CEO and co-founder of Netlify.
I think you guys gave me a little bit of an intro, but I'm Ryan Carniato. I created Solid.js framework. I also worked on Marco framework at eBay and joined Netlify in May to work on open source. So, yeah.
Great. Well, thanks guys for joining. First off, congrats on the big news. I'll throw the first question to Matt. Just, the obvious question is, how should the ecosystem and users of both products interpret it and what it means going forward.
I think they should be excited. I'm excited. I'm excited to welcome the Gatsby team. We, of course, at Netlify, we've always had like a framework agnostic strategy as a platform, right? Like it's always been my view that there will never be a single front-end framework that's the best choice for all the different types of use cases and challenges and experiences out there. And it's always healthy to have like choice between different approaches and so on. That's still going to be absolutely true for Netlify going forward. I think we have a lot of opportunity to reopen Gatsby more and let it function more as a true open source project on its own right. And then I'm really excited to incorporate some of the innovations that the Gatsby team has been working on at the cloud and infrastructure side, both in terms of like the build speeds they've managed to achieve, and I'm keen to be able to apply that to the whole framework ecosystem. And then in terms of the Valhalla product that the Gatsby team has been piloting with some of their larger customers, that are really aimed at taking sort of the core strengths of Gatsby in terms of the source plugin ecosystem and making that available to the whole world of modern front-end frameworks. I've believed for sort of a long time now that one of the next barriers to this sort of whole mainstream adoption for the Jamstack approach is really like once you start building a self-standing front end and you start talking to all these different APIs and services where some are internal and some are external, the architects thinking through that kind of setup also need some more robust patterns for actually getting the content and data out of those services and into the front end. And I'm excited about Valhalla for that reason.
Great, thank you. And I'll just remind folks, we are like an open mic format, so feel free to raise your hand. We'll bring you up to the stage. We do have somebody else who just came up. Shirash, well, I'll call on you in a second. I have just one or two other things that came up organically, actually, from Twitter. So and the coverage. So one thing that came up, I saw, Fred, for example, from Astro. Send a tweet earlier today about noticing that OneGraph was shut down. How do you relate this to OneGraph in your mind?
So it's very much part of the same vision, right? Like as I said, I've believed for a long time that this kind of middleware layer is gonna play an important role in the future. Launching Netlify Graph gave us the opportunity of talking through what people need from this middleware layer with a lot of different customers and partners and so on. And we learned a lot from that experience and from having like Netlify Graph living in Netlify Lab. And obviously like what we are aiming to do with Valhalla is very much the next step in that journey. And I'm also excited for the OneGraph team to be part of building that, right? Like they bring just a ton of experience to this whole area.
Okay, so if I was to repeat back what I've heard, it sounds like basically this is going to be, Valhalla being integrated is the next generation of kind of the work that was started with OneGraph, and OneGraph is definitely being sunset, at least temporarily, so to speak.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
That's fair.
Okay. I'll get to some other questions, but I want to be as audience-driven as possible. So, Shirash, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. Feel free to either comment or ask your question.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the topic seemed very interesting, and this may be a very extremely basic question. I'm sure someone else has this question too here, so I'll ask it on everyone's behalf. What does this mean for someone? So I didn't know the background of what Netlify did, and the whole story. So what does this mean for someone trying to use the product in like 3 months from now? What does this change for them?
Can you help give us, you know, there's so many different types of backgrounds for, you know, developers in JavaScript and web development. Just give us kind of a quick summary of your background to set the context.
Oh, my background, I'm not a JavaScript developer. I work in data analytics, working with databases, data visualizations. That's my background.
Got it. Okay. Well, Matt, maybe I should turn that one over to you.
Sure, sure. I mean, obviously, we already have a lot of customers that have been building with Gatsby, the open source framework, since their early days, more from the early days than from the later days. For those customers, like, this will just lead to an even better experience. And then for customers that are not using Gatsby, we will be able to take a lot of the technologies that Gatsby built to support their framework and extend them to the whole ecosystem of front-end frameworks. That's both in terms of techniques for improving the time it takes from you update a piece of content and until you have a new version of your site live. And in terms of like their source plugin ecosystem that we can make available. As someone like that works on the data side, you probably won't see a lot of difference day to day from this. But if you do have a data source and you want your web teams to be able to build visualizations and dashboards and toolings around it, then the source plugin ecosystem and the Valhalla product can probably be relevant in terms of like making sure that you can get that data into a UI in a way that is not going to put load or stress on your data source.
Looks like that answered your question.
It did. Okay. I'm looking into like more details on what it is as we talk.
Okay.
Let you take over.
Sure. Thank you for participating. Again, feel free to raise your hand and we're happy to bring anyone up to the stage. It looks like Bro Nifty is there, another regular. So one of the things while we're waiting for other folks to raise their hand that was in the coverage, so Richard McManus at Newstack, you know, had some coverage and he interviewed you. And it was also a topic we talked about at the very beginning is, you know, Gatsby was themselves trying to build a platform, a cloud infrastructure platform of their own tied to their framework. What do you think this means for the thesis of, you know, you have an open source project, gets VC funding, and the way to monetize that is by building a cloud platform around that particular framework?
Yeah, that's it. That's a really good question. There's obviously still a lot of challenges to open source monetization in general. And there's often, like, I think one of the challenges we saw with Gatsby was that as they started building a platform around their framework, they also started to feel a little less open in the sense that some of the features were suddenly more tied to their platform than to a project that you could really take and run everywhere. That's one of the opportunities we have now to reopen Gatsby a bit in that way, right? Like, but I think that's often a risk you start seeing with some of the frameworks that try to monetize through a platform specifically for that framework, that to really make that motion work, they also do have to try to make it harder to use the framework in other places, right? We're really committed and I'm sure like Ryan can speak to that, to not forcing the open source frameworks that we help maintain and build to be like Netlify only. And I'm also like constantly looking into what are ways that we can create also alternative avenues for open source projects to thrive and monetize than just the VC background.
Could you describe? So I see that Ryan has a hand up and Chris has a question. He's on deck, but maybe Ryan, jump in if you've got something to add to this. But the follow-up question to that is, like, what are those alternatives? So, and or what is the durable competitive advantage you can say to a VC? Like, I'm trying to imagine, what do you say to your VC about your monetization strategy if you're completely platform agnostic? If you're in a framework, or what is the other way to monetize that you'd suggest? Like, what is the, they're kind of between a rock and a hard place, right? If you're a framework creator.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, there's the expectation to be able to use a lot of these tools for free. So you have to really think about what kind of angle you can do. Like, this is very challenging. I like th because these things do require money. like we live off the donations and the support of our patrons. Netlify has been supporting Solid for almost 2 years now on the donation side, and it does make a difference. But that's still, compared to being able to, work on it, and be ha have that kind of resources, a completely different game. And I wanted to say, like, it is really cool to see this kind of progression on open source and what we've seen, like, happening inside Netflix. Matt can obviously say this stuff and outwardly everyone can go, this is a good thing, but I'm living it. And I work on the OSS team along with Zach from 11D. And I guess soon many of the Gatsby team members. But more than that, we work right next to, like, the integration teams that work on, making sure all the other frameworks work on Netlify. And while these are, slightly different teams with different objectives, it's really cool to see how much we can get by working together. And this is why I'm very excited about a lot of stuff coming in with this Gatsby acquire, because, like, we're talking about more tools and capability that we can add to lots of frameworks. Yeah, this just grow just continues to grow, which is amazing to me.
So I mean I want to be clear. I personally, as a developer, love the framework agnosticism. On like both sides, like no developer wants when vendor lock-in, and I have, we have in our own experience ran into the same problem where frameworks had features that they never had a clear specification for, behaviors that are kind of off book, so to speak, but yet exist on the cloud associated cloud platform. So I appreciate that as a consumer, but I'm trying to look at it from the other side, like what options? So I totally get there's a lot of synergy here, but what are the other options potentially you think in the ecosystem for open source frameworks to monetize? And because there's a lot of investment that goes into the work, Ryan, you do, and look at all the amount of dollars that have gone into, improving build tooling and things like that. So do you have any thoughts on what that might look like?
I mean, I'll try one more time at this because it's challenging. But, like, I've talked to a lot of other OS maintainers about this as well, because we look at it and we've got, like, it feels like there's only, like, a couple choices. And most of them are kind of, like, come with some kind of heavy trade-off, right? The most obvious one is find yourself a company or create the company yourself that basically will invest in the framework, and it because they want to use it. Like, the framework is the tool they use to build their main product, so they're invested that way. But then, of course, your whole roadmap is determined by that. This is what you see at the larger companies too. Like, I worked at eBay on Marco, right? Like, essentially the framework serves eBay first and then others beyond that. And, same with Meta and React and, all of those things. So it's good because people will put money into it and you will be able to get staff and you will build things that are important to the company. The other option is try and raise money to make a business out of the framework. But as I said, it's essentially free. So you're kind of, like, in this interesting place where you're like, do you make money on consulting? Do you make money on tertiary analytics? Do you, like, make money on, like, it has to be something else, on cloud providing. And I think we're starting to see that the trying to, like, start with the framework and make cloud is a challenging thing, to the point that in the last few years, the last couple of frameworks that have kind of made companies out of it isn't terribly clear to me what the outcome is of that yet. I don't know if it's clear to anyone, but, like, we know we need the money. So do you not take the money? I'm not sure. And then, like,
I tend to
what?
usually say yes to money when it's offered.
But then what we're the I was talking to Tanner at one point, and he was like, look, I've done a good job in open source in building a brand. He's like, maybe, we could build a brand around, like he's, kind of set of libraries or framework, and then people, I could just kind of sell that brand off, like continue the work open source, and then maybe they can pull it in. And I'm like, I told him, I'm like, I don't know, does it lose credibility, now that it's like, I don't know, some company's query instead of, whatever React query, solid query, like or TanStack query rather, like does it lose credibility there? Like, it does it stop being what, like the benefit you're giving to that company, does it stop actually being that benefit? I'm not sure. And then option number four, which is the one I'm happiest with right now, obviously, is find patrons, like find companies that have aligned tertiary vision that don't necessarily depend on you building it to like build their product, but maybe it has some positive impact. So far, that seems to be a lot of the deployment side of things. Where I find myself here with Netlify, where there's kind of like some synergy, but there's also a lot of openness in the sense that we don't have to, like Netlify's infrastructure isn't built using Solid.js. Like there isn't that like that tie-in. It keeps it open, keeps the spirit of it. So, but I mean, the trade-off there is that's a large investment to ask for, perhaps, in something that might be not exactly, the what the company's using it. So,
Well,
like all of these,
another way you can look at it is that there's investing in like a brand and there's investing in like a person. Like they're not just investing in Saul, like they're investing in you, Ryan Carniato. Carniato is awesome. So just by hiring you, Netlify gains because of your engineering ability and your just experience and your connections. Whereas to give maybe a counterexample, you look at when I think it was Narwhal purchased Lerna, they were buying Lerna the project, the brand. It wasn't necessarily a person so much as like Lerna the tool that already exists as a thing integrated into people's projects. So I think there's times where it makes more sense to invest in one versus the other. And sometimes a project comes along with good people, sometimes a person comes along with like a good project.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. It's just interesting though, because it seems like there isn't any single way to tackle this, and it seems like all the ways that we see a lot of them, especially a lot of times when we try to build businesses out of things that might not be businesses, are face a lot of challenges. So it isn't clear, but we know we all use and need this software. So, as I said, you know where I am. I'm just super stoked to have this opportunity. So,
I want to let Matt go. Because it looks like he was coming off mute. Matt, what were you going to say?
no, I was just going to say the one thing that's sort of a bit unique to this like front end framework ecosystem and front end ecosystem in general is that we haven't really managed to get success across our industry in setting down any kind of sort of like really influential open source foundations for that, right? Like I think that's a bit of a difference when you look at a lot of the open source software that drives the infrastructure we're all building on, right? Like where foundations like the Cloud Native Foundation or the Apache Foundation or the Linux Foundations and so on have
JS
typically,
Foundation.
precisely right. Like, but I think there's a set there where for example Kubernetes is very characterized by like you have very large strong competitors investing a lot into the same project because it's really shared infrastructure, right? Like and once you get to that scale then you start having a certain level of of stability and open governance and so on that will give the whole sense of longevity to the community around it, right? Like, and I think maybe it's because like the frameworks and the tooling for building UI by necessity changes so often because like the expectations to UIs changes so often, or maybe we just haven't found the right construction yet, right? Like, but I think that's something that we still haven't really seen success with in the front end space.
Yeah, definitely is a challenge. We've got a bunch of people on deck who've come up to ask questions or comment. I'll get to them in a second. We're at the halfway point, although we sometimes go an hour over. So if you're just tuning in, this is JavaScript Jam Live. It's an open mic for anything web development or JavaScript related. We have it every Wednesday, noontime in the San Francisco time zone. And if you are getting any value from anybody up here on stage, feel free to click on their profile and follow them. And in addition, you can go to javascriptjam.com and sign up for our newsletter. So next up on deck, I think, Chris, you were next up as a person who wanted to ask question or have a comment. I just want to give you time to
yeah. speak. Super, super excited that Gatsby...
Also, introduce yourself and your company first.
Okay. So, I'm Christopher Burns. I'm the CTO at Everfund. And we're building an SDK for creating donations on the web. And my big question that I have is, what's the immediate benefits that customers of Netlify will see? And what's the biggest benefit of customers of Gatsby Cloud will see? Because there's a lot of interchangeable technology that each platform has built independently. And how can they come together for all frameworks to enjoy?
Yeah, I mean, there's different pieces of answers to that. There's the cloud system where, of course, over time you'll see us unite the two products. So there's just an Netlify cloud platform and not two different ones. But obviously, like the Gatsby Cloud team has made a bunch of innovations that's been driving their product and that's been working really well for them. They've sort of had the advantage also of starting their cloud product later and being able to really see what does this kind of cloud product look like and think from first principles. So there's some of the things that we might have evolved over a long time that will have like better responses in their infrastructure and their technology, and then other things where our cloud is just so ahead in terms of like the scale and type of customers we've been working on by now that obviously that's going to be the way ahead. But in short, like over time, you can expect us to help getting faster build times to everyone, and a better edge cloud product to everyone. And then of course, the Valhalla project I've mentioned a couple of times is sort of the big new product that will come out of this that will really allow you to use like the source plugin ecosystem that Gatsby pioneered together with any modern front-end framework. This morning I was building a little demo of Valhalla with Solid Start just to play with it as an example.
Ah, that sounds so tight. I'd be curious if Chris would be interested in Valhalla because he tried a very similar product once known as StepZen. Chris, you still there?
Yes. It's late, so I'm doing a lot of chores around the house. I'm super interested in seeing how products can integrate with Gatsby Valhalla and also how it can basically take that need of having a database and an API away from that front-end web developer and just not have to worry about it.
Gonna lob those GraphQL queries over the wall, get back whatever they want, live in the dream.
Sometimes you don't get as much of the dream as you want, but yes, that seems to be the front end developer. Like Chris, I think what Chris just said there is very much, you know, the front end developer dream. Like everything's an API. I don't have to think about anything else, whether it's databases or infrastructure in general, which makes a lot of sense. Bro Nifty, I think you are up next on deck.
Yes, thank you, Sean. Hi, everybody. And I actually wanted to make a comment to the patronage subject, specifically to Ryan. I feel like, you know, Ryan's like, he's a brand unto himself. And like everybody knows, he knows pretty much at least as much as any of the best people like on the React core team or, you know, the best of the best. So it's kind of like if you're doing patronage, and you can bring Ryan under your umbrella, you not only have access to him as a consultant, but also anybody who and whoever else who's helping him, but also like a complement of OSS contributors who are also contributing. So you have like the entire stock of people who, yeah, we have a new issue, and like maybe it serves Netlify. That's fine, whatever. It's, you know, to the greater good, right? So you have like that whole base. So you're getting like more than you bargained for in terms of that. So I think like, I mean, I pay people to consult me. I put them on retainer, just like mentorship and like help me answer questions that are difficult and things like that. Just because it's like, you need, I'm not smart enough to answer these questions. You know, you need people to help you. But so Ryan, yeah, Ryan's like number one. So I would say that is really good bet. I don't have any commentary about anything else though.
You know, go ahead, Ryan. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say, thank you. This is very kind. I do appreciate being in the position I am, and the opportunity opens up. And I'd like to think that the relationship is mutually beneficial. I think it's always good to have a ear on where things are heading or what's going on, and getting to work. Like I got hired on for OSS. Obviously, I do a lot of work on Solid, but this has also been able to facilitate really cool things. Like I was working on benchmarks that the guys over at Builder were working on, and we were benchmarking like a bunch of different frameworks on the server, everything from Quick to Astro to Next to Nuxt. And having that kind of opportunity to do that kind of stuff as well, you know, I started making demos in most frameworks just to kind of like get an idea of how what the feel was.
Some of it's extreme, yeah, and just like the why predict the future when you can build it, you know.
Thanks. Yeah. And that was like the kind of thing, right? Like that kind of R&D is sometimes difficult to find time for. Like it's not just R&D though, because it also promotes goodwill. And you saw a little while ago, this kind of been a topic that kind of came up around the fall, all these kind of co-tweets between JavaScript frameworks on Twitter, and like a lot of really like mutual handshaking and whatnot. And I feel like this is the kind of environment that can promote that. And I think that's really good, because like, that's how these ideas propagate. That's like, I learn a lot from other frameworks. And I look at, you know, different things different people are doing, and to have that kind of opportunity in the environment to be able to do that is just incredible.
Yeah. Well, first off, Ryan, I think even before you were, you know, sponsored by Netlify, I think you've just done an amazing job with Solid. A huge amount of respect for what you've built. But if I was to rephrase, you know, what you described there, you know, Anthony was listing off this idea of you invest in the brand versus investing in the you know, or the persona or the person that's at the host as much as you invest in the product itself. I think there's another benefit here, which is the ability to short circuit, I guess, participation in and influence in the ecosystem as a whole through both the framework and relationships that are built and cross-pollination of ideas. So it sounds like what you're describing here, which is really powerful. I guess going back though to this question of like the monetization routes, you had mentioned, you know, when we were talking a little bit earlier, you mentioned, for example, TanStack, and you had this conversation with Tanner Lindsay. And for those who don't know, he's created a variety of popular open source React, well, originally React focused frameworks like React Table, now been renamed TanStack and React Query or Tan Query or TanStack Query. And I actually had a very similar conversation about this topic with him at Jamstack conference. And, you know, the perspective he gave was very much echoed by what you were saying here. But in his case, he's, you know, financially he's concerned about like the strings that might, I guess, to speak for him, which was, you know, whenever Anthony had said earlier, I tend to say yes to money. When it's VC money, you have to worry, you know, what are you potentially saying yes to that follows on that expectation. And, you know, he's in a position right now where he just enjoys the open source work he's doing, but he also has come up with a novel monetization strategy to a limited extent, which is the React Table or whatever it's been renamed to now is sponsored by AG Grid, which is, you know, you would have thought is a competitor. It's a competing kind of table product. But one of the things, you know, he said when he announced it was that he learned that the audiences for both are actually different. And in one sense, you know, he's kind of an onboarding to people who eventually migrating there. And that was an interesting way for him to look at monetization that I thought was fascinating. When we think about other ways for, you know, open source work to get rewarded, that's one potential way.
Yeah, I mean, if you find the angle to kind of make that fit in, because like one product almost being like a funnel into the other one, or being kind of like a kind of like you can cover the whole range, and it makes a lot of sense. I do think JavaScript frameworks, in how ambitious they are, might have a bigger challenge in that sense. Like, it does feel sometimes, at least like externally, you're like, is this just like has to be a battle? Do these things have to be competing with each other directly, because they're both trying to like what take over that portion of the world? So yeah, I think Matt already kind of covered it pretty quite well when he was talking about foundations and you know, different ways to kind of fund these things might be ultimately the way, because I at a certain point this goes beyond what a single author does. Like, it's, you know, for Solid right now, this is a really good place to be, but like, you know, when things grow to a point, you know, that, you know, like React type heights of things, I think, you know, you're talking about a very different kind of situation and consideration. But I suppose by that point there's probably other things, you know, there that are options. I think it's tricky to get to that point without having some amount of funding behind it, though.
Yeah, the last thing I would kind of pop in terms of like axes to think about these things on, I always found what Tanner was doing really interesting, because he didn't build projects first and then like try and monetize it or figure out a way to make money on top of it, so much as he built tools that were immediately useful to him in his business that he was already doing. So they were kind of like forged in the fires of real use cases. And then it was something that everyone else was like, once they saw he had built it, were like, hey, I want this, to the point where they would actually start paying money to make ensure that it continues to survive. So I think that's kind of a cool model. And it's, when I first heard him describe it, I said it was like open core inside out, because you start with building something for a business and then open source it, versus starting from open source and then build a business around it. And I think that's something that hasn't been explored to the same extent.
Yeah, I'm going to pivot us a little bit to another thing that came up in the coverage of this. And it was in actually Richard McManus at the New Stack when he wrote his article and he interviewed you, Matt. He had a section where he basically said, is Jamstack still a thing? The definition seems to keep changing. And he walked through kind of his understanding of the definition and how it's changed over the years, and what this, you know, this new change is a reflection of in terms of the definition. Do you want to elaborate on to you what Jamstack means today versus what it meant, you know, like half a decade ago?
Yeah, I think the whole ecosystem around it has evolved so much from when we started out, right? Like, when I coined the term, the ecosystem around us was, on the one hand, sort of very community-driven, open source, static site generators like Jekyll and Hugo and Middleman and Roots. And on the other hand, application frameworks like Angular and Ember and the an emerging React, but it was very early days, right? Like, there was an API economy emerging, but like just the massive dominating tools for building for the web typically like was based on your choice of backend determining how you were building your front end, right? Like, so people would pick Ruby and Rails and they would get the asset pipeline and everything from there, and the choice of template languages. They would build a store with Shopify, and now their front end developers have to work in Liquid and a set of constraints, or they would build with WordPress or Drupal, and now there's like a whole set of choice for like what's the constraint of what kind of user experiences can you actually build. Or in large companies, maybe there would be customers of Adobe Experience Manager and everything would be decided for them around that, right? Like, and from the start, the key thought behind coining a term that was sort of a category shift was that I thought that we would move towards a world where we would decouple the web experience layer from the whole backend layer and treat that web experience layer as essentially its own application with its own built tool chain, its own deployment layer, its own release management process and everything, right? Back when we started, the way to do that was static deploys, right? Like static deploys to a CDN. Then in 2017 at Netlify, we introduced Netlify functions as a part of our stack and opened up a new set of possibilities. And then in the last couple of years, we've seen edge functions emerge as yet another sort of runtime layer for this stack. But I still don't think that there's any name or nomenclature that better describes the sort of fundamental shift we've seen in the web architecture of today from tools like WordPress and Drupal and Ruby on Rails and Shopify and Magento and Adobe Experience Managers towards this whole modern world of self-standing web frameworks from Next to Gatsby to SvelteKit to Solid Start to Astro to 11T and so on and so on. Like it's just been a very foundational change, right? Like, and I was on this code podcast with a code school the other day and explained some of this change and the guy from Scrimba that ran it say like, right, it's interesting, right? Because if you describe this, most of our students will never have seen the old world, right? Like they will never have experienced it. They just take it for granted that you built these web UIs as self-standing experiences. But that really wasn't the case, right? Like, so in that way, of course, there's also a certain like level where we start just talking about modern front-end as the nomenclator. But I still think if you want to describe this architectural difference between the monolithic approach where every single website, web app or web store is one application grouping both like the user experience and the business logic and data access, and then to the typical modern approach of building self-standing web UIs, like I haven't seen a term that describes it better than Jamstack.
So I'll again remind folks, feel free to raise your hand and we'll bring you up to the stage to ask questions. There's a lot to unpack there, some of which was in the article. The first question I want to ask, you know, is it feels like there has been the wind has been at the back of the API first, headless, Jamstack, composable over the last, you know, let's say 5 or 10 years, for, you know, because there was a lot of investment in technology, like anybody who was software was eating the world, even if you weren't a tech company. And so it was very clear you need to invest in a developer focused type solution that gave this type of audience and persona a lot of power to kind of perfect the interface and output. It feels like there's some headwinds that are related and some that are only partially overlapping. That, like, for example, there definitely seems to be an approach against maybe very heavy JavaScript frameworks. There's potentially a push against the investment it takes to migrate a website, say a legacy site, from a monolithic, say, architecture onto a, you know, decoupled architecture, because it requires development work. So there's kind of this investment that you need to do to get there. And right now, in the macroeconomic environment, you know, people are trying to figure out what their budget's going to be, especially in enterprises where it's run partially by a procurement department. And they're like, well, okay, right now, you know, this idea that we need to be a software company, even though we're producing these other widgets, isn't necessarily a high priority. Do you feel like you see those headwinds, or like, what's your interpretation of that?
I feel more like we're like sort of crossing the chasm, right? Like if you look at a signal like just WordPress adoption, right? Like WordPress was growing in market share until the middle of last year, right? Like, and that was the point where it sort of finally started to stagnate and now slowly decreasing, right? But I think a lot of those developers that are not sort of the very early adopter crowd that are constantly looking for new frameworks, but are sort of more in the world of, look, whatever we pick, we need to have some stability, right? Like we can't, like we're not able to spend the majority of our time re-engineering our web front end every year, every 2 years. We need some more stability. I think we'll see that all of us as vendors have to build some more tooling for them. It's one of the areas where Gatsby and Gatsby Cloud has had a lot of commercial success in terms of like the sort of mid-market to enterprise businesses that also need a like where Gatsby being a bit more opinionated in how you connect to data, get it into your UI, build with it, has been really useful for those developers to sort of get from one place to the other faster. And I think in general, now that we are entering this stage of sort of this category fundamentally going really mainstream, right? Like all of us will also have to think about what does that mean for the next set of tools that we need to offer to this next set of developers.
That's really interesting. Are there other areas that you feel the ecosystem needs to solve, whether it's, you know, on the frameworks or the vendors? So obviously you talked about, you know, the integrations. I talked about, you know, the issues with performance in certain client-side heavy frameworks. Are there other things that you think the ecosystem has to solve in order to push us over the chasm?
Some of it ideally comes to some of these foundational pieces of governance, right? Like I think once you start making decisions in very large companies on building something that's going to stick around and that you are going to keep developing on, open source projects that are not just open source but that also have open governance and open roadmaps are going to be really appealing, because you need a level of stability and you need to know that you don't suddenly get a set of completely breaking changes thrown at you at a keynote or something like that, right? But that there's long-term stability. The other piece that's obviously one of our strategic directions is like, I think as you start making this more mainstream, we also have to make it easier to get the data from all these different data sources, both internal sources and headless API, headless commerce systems. We need to make it easier to get them out of there and into the web UI.
Okay, that's an interesting list. Do you feel like, I don't know the polite way to say it, so I'll just say it, like, do you still feel like WordPress, so to speak, is the enemy still? Or what's your view on those, that ecosystem and say that the stacks of WordPress and Drupal,
arch which nemesis up instead
yeah
of
yeah.
No, I rarely I'm just not the person to perceive the world so much in terms of enemies, and also like from where we are sitting, like just if you look at Netlify's customer base, right, like it's every use case and vertical, right, like from Twilio's core product engineering team building the core SaaS app of Twilio with Netlify to Unilever.com replacing Adobe Experience Manager with Netlify for a lot of their properties, to luxury brand e-commerce like Sennheiser building their storefront on top of Netlify, to old school retailers building their omni-channel UIs with Netlify and so on, right? Like so it's such a big, like the total web space is so big that it's not so relevant for me to point to a specific like enemy. It's more like a fundamental re-architecture of everything to be composable, right? Like whether it's sites or stores and apps. And a lot of the legacy systems keeps living on, right? Like so one of our customers have like more than 2,000 Drupal sites sitting around, right? Like, and they're not gonna be able to go in and re-platform every one of those and rework them to different headless CMSs and so on, right? Like, but they do want to be able to iterate on the visual experience of those without relying on Drupal. So in that way, like they need this middleware to get the data from the old sites into new front ends and so on, right? Like, so I wouldn't say that it's like one specific target. It's more like a large broad foundational change in how most businesses are actually building web UIs.
Another area that I've come across is this is a movement that started with developers. And sometimes the non-technical stakeholders' ability to modify and edit and control either the content or its look and feel in a lot of setups can be constrained and adds more friction, ironically, on those people. But the developers have full reign. I mean, sometimes the content folks are told, and they're non-technical at all, right? You've got to write Markdown. And they're like, this feels backwards, you know, if they're used to a WYSIWYG editor. Do you feel like the ecosystem has solved that, or it's still on its way to solving that?
I think there's still work to do. There's still work to do. And lots of different work going on across the industry to solve both the intersection of like how the developers built these tools and how the content editors and marketeers interact with it and how developers built these tools and how designers and design systems flow into it, right? Like, I think there's still a lot of innovation and a lot of work to be done in that space.
Is there anybody that stands out that you think is doing a good job there in solving it?
Are there many different from like companies like Storyblock that sort of build more of the visual experience into a headless CMS, or companies like Stackbit that sort of abstracted that layer and brought in marketeers in a multi-origin system, to companies like a Builder that are really innovating in the sense of making the component library what decides how content editors can get visual editing and interact there. There's just really a lot of innovation going on in that space right now.
Okay, great. We are basically at our time slot. So I'll turn it over to you and Ryan if you have any last thoughts and anything you wanna to leave us with.
Okay, I'll go first. Honestly, this whole thing and this news, I know there's been a lot of, talk about Gatsby in different ways, and this is the kind of world I live in when I see it. I'm very excited to have that experience on the team, and I'm very excited to be working closely with people with this experience because there's not that many out there who have built, things that are large JavaScript frameworks used by, so many people. And to be able to bring that into Netlify, be able to bring those ideas out, talk, integrate, I am very excited for the future here. And I'm looking forward to things just only getting better.
Great. Matt, anything else you want to close it off before I wrap up the session?
And no, nothing special. Like I'm just more excited than ever for the future.
Okay. Well, thank you, Matt and Ryan, for jumping on. Thank you, our regulars, Chris and Bro Nifty. Thank you, Anthony, our developer advocate at Edgio, for hosting. I want to remind everyone, we are here every week at 12 p.m. San Francisco time on Wednesday. Anything JavaScript or
web development. Pacific time is now San Francisco time.
Pacific time. Well, it's the new New York of the West. So yes, US Pacific time zone. I'm just, if you think I'm too San Francisco centered, I'm not in San Francisco, although I used to live there for quite a while. But yes, we're here every Wednesday, 12 p.m. Pacific time. To talk about anything web development or JavaScript related. Next week, we will have Josh Goldberg, who will be talking to us about TypeScript. And he just did a crash course on TypeScript for us. In fact, if you went to the Jamstack conference or you saw the Jamstack State of Jamstack survey or you saw the State of JavaScript survey, you know TypeScript is off the hook. Everyone who uses it loves it. That you can't say that about almost everything else in the ecosystem. So if you're, been meaning to get on the TypeScript train, now is the time. We have a great crash course that Josh did, and it'll be here 1 week from today to answer questions and talk about TypeScript. And so definitely check that out. You can go to javascriptjam.com to check it out. And while you're there, feel free to click and subscribe to our newsletter. And with that, Anthony, I'll let you close us out. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was really great to have this conversation. Thank you, Ryan and Matt, for hopping in and talking about this. I'm definitely going to be sharing this recording around for anyone who wants to learn more about this, because we went very deep into it. And yeah, Ishan already said we'll be here every week. And yeah, unfortunately, I do not have Scott's usual closing music, so we're just going to have to end it right here. But thank you so much, everyone, for being here, and hope to see you next time.